As Kathleen said, my name is Rachel Kotcher. I'm in the Division of STD Prevention, and today I'm going to talk about adolescent use of technology and then provide some examples of ways that technology is currently being used for STD prevention, HIV, and sexual health. So, but before we can even start about it, we really need to get a profile of this current generation of young people. And this generation is dubbed Generation Z, and this cohort was born between the late 90s and the mid-2000s, and they really have never known a world without technology. Like, mobile phones have always been smartphones to them. Facebook has always existed. And they're very conscientious, they're hardworking, they want to make change, and they take in information instantly, and they communicate just as fast. So we're seeing it with, like, emojis and six-second vines, but they move on just as quickly. And social media is very much an extension of their lives. It really defines who they are to the outside world, and whether they know it or not, they're really defining themselves as a brand. And really, we should not confuse them with millennials. So this is just a quick snapshot of, to give an example of how they differ compared to other generations. So these bars are the different generations, Generation Z being at the bottom. And if you quickly look at the blue bars, which represents Facebook, you see that Facebook is popular among all the other generations. But when you look at Generation Z, it actually comes in fourth behind other platforms like YouTube and Snapchat and Instagram. And what they're doing in these spaces, well, one is they're online. They're online, going online daily, and about a third of them will say they're online constantly. But most of them are going online through mobile phones, and the majority of teens own mobile phones. So about 87% of teens between the ages of 14 and 18 now own a smartphone. And they're texting a lot. And it's whether they're texting directly through traditional platforms like we think of on our iPhones or through apps like WhatsApp. And they're sending up to about 30 texts a day on average. And this is where we begin to see differences demographically. So, for instance, we're seeing that African-American youth are more likely to own smartphones, girls tend to text more than boys, and lower-income teens tend to use texting apps. And I'm not really going into these demographic differences in this talk due to time constraints, but it's something to consider when you're looking at different platforms for the teens that you're trying to reach, who's actually using what. And teens are also saying they're starting to ditch traditional texting like we do over our phones for other platforms like Snapchat, because for them it's more casual. It allows them to do more fun stuff with their text, like they can overlay text on top of photos, send sound. And they're also going to these sites. So YouTube ranks the highest, as you can see here, followed by Gmail. And then we have Snapchat and Instagram and Facebook vying for third. And really, different surveys will show you who comes out on top. May vary across surveys, but you'll see all these sites that you see on this slide are all the contenders that you'll see. But what it really tells us is they're using multiple platforms for multiple functions. So I wanted to include this slide. This doesn't include data from Generation Z, but it does show millennials, and it does do media consumption breakdown by sexual orientation, which we don't see a lot of. It's really, or actually, I have found it hard to find media breakdown by sexual orientation, so I wanted to include this. But essentially what we're seeing in these first three columns is sexual orientation by use of different platforms, and Facebook rises to the top for millennials, which is not the same for Generation Z, but all the other platforms that they're using are very similar. And I actually think that the younger generation probably is more aligned with their same age peers than they are with same sex, a different generation. But what's interesting, what this survey did was look at how teens actually feel about these different technologies, and it's sometimes conflicting. So what they use may be very popular, but how they feel about it may be a little contradictory. So just looking at that first column of Facebook, you see that Facebook ranks high, number one, for being popular and addictive, but it's also ranks high for being boring and annoying. And this kind of makes sense. This makes sense because or it could just be a function of Facebook, because Facebook plays so many roles. There's so many things you can do on it. You can get news, you can post your status, you can share photos. So it evokes many different feelings. And then you see that YouTube, which is the next column, ranks high for all positive attributes but no negative. Instagram has a mixture of both, Instagram being the one that they say is the most fake. Snapchat also has a mixture of both, but I wanted to point out Twitter, which only ranks in the negatives, so it seems to be losing favor with the younger generations. And then if you look at, so the slide before, which I should have told you at the beginning, showed millennials and Generation Z together. This breaks it out. And what you see when you're comparing the younger teens to the older ones is that there are very few places where they agree on platforms, except for Facebook. They both rank as the highest for being the most authentic, and Instagram for being the most fake. And the Instagram, I think, is probably also a function of the fact that young people, and I think also us as well, recognize that you don't put your true self necessarily on these sites. You perfect what you're putting up. You know, you're marketing yourself, and so kids in particular recognize it. So they often think that what they're putting online is authentic, but judge the other people's posts as inauthentic. And so, I wanted to go back. So YouTube again, which is the red circle, ranks high among these younger teens. So YouTube is really a major, you know, destination for a lot of these teens. And one of the things that's driving this are blogs. And this is video blogging or vlogging. And so you'll see, I don't know if you can actually see on this graph, but it's basically being driven by these younger populations, the younger ages driving the popularity of these vlogs. And across the right-hand side, I put up some of the top three bloggers and their subscribers. So the top one is a woman named Zoe. She goes by Zoella. Her whole thing is about beauty and fashion, and she has 11 million subscribers. The guy underneath her is this guy, Joey Graceffa. He has 6 million subscribers, but his videos have been viewed over a billion times, like as in a B, billion. And then this last family, they're called the Shaytards. They have over 4 million viewers. They have over 2 billion views. And this family, actually, the parents quit their jobs because YouTube monetizes popular blogs like this, so they are able to quit their jobs. And I looked at one estimate that they're making $2,000 a day just on video views. That's $60,000 a month, which I think is why my kids keep telling me we should have our own YouTube channel. So they're also going online and using their mobile apps for dating. Of all teens, 35% said they've been in a romantic relationship that's serious or not so serious. And of those, 24% have dated somebody or hooked up with somebody that they first met online. And that's a pretty high percentage. But more than that, of all teens, they're using it for flirting and expressing interest. And so I put this quote at the bottom because I think it's very telling and probably was true of all of us when we were younger, that these interactions, these flirty interactions over technology, have their own written but completely understood rules. So everything from the choice of one's emoji to how you spell the word hey can carry a deeper meaning. And supposedly the more Y's you add to the end of the word hey indicates interest, expressed interest. So then lastly I want to talk about health information online. The internet by far across all media is the primary source of information for teens. And they're going online to get health information. 84% have said they've gone online to get health information, and most of them are starting at Google. Of those who go to Google for health information, 50% never go beyond that first click. And YouTube has now made it a requirement, well, not a requirement, but if your site is not mobily optimized, it's not going to show up in the top results. So it's really impressed upon us to make sure that our websites in particular can be viewed on a mobile device or really won't be seen by teens. After Google, they're going to a specific medical website like WebMD. And then I want to point out towards the bottom, you'll see that very few teens are going directly to a site that's been created for them. Only 8% said that. And when asked why they're going online for health information, the number one reason is for a school project, which makes sense, but is actually one I never really thought of, but, you know, makes sense. But then it's followed very closely by those who are looking for information for themselves to help them make better choices, to identify symptoms, to figure out treatment options. And 13% said they go online because they can't talk to a parent about a topic that they need information about. But more importantly, 35% are saying that they're making some sort of behavioral change because of the information they're finding online or a mobile app. So it's what we're putting up there is being used. And then lastly, they were asked about health issues that were important to their peers and health information that was important to them. And when you asked about what was important to their peers, they said STDs. It ranked high at 57%. But when asked if it was important to them, it ranked a little bit lower, 32. And then I've just circled the other sexual health topics that were they said were important to them. So pregnancy, birth control, puberty, and domestic and sexual violence. So then more specifically looking at LGBTQ youth, they're going online more frequently than their heterosexual peers. And the top reasons for that are privacy and curiosity, but they're also 4 times more likely to say it's because they had no one to ask. But what they're doing with the information actually doesn't change by sexual orientation. A lot of them are saying they're doing nothing with this information, but then followed by having a conversation as well as taking an action. So ultimately, it is very important for us to have information online on the internet for people who feel, particularly for young people who feel like they don't have other options. But at the end of the day, they're actually going there and getting this information, so we have to make sure it's accurate and accessible. So it's worth noting, there's a lot we can learn from the marketing industry, and that's where I pulled a lot of this data from. But we also have to recognize we're not peddling a product that teens necessarily want. Like, people are not clamoring to get a chlamydia test. But social media is an important marketing channel, and we need to recognize that and be there. But in being there, we have to also be very vigilant about making sure that we're monitoring and responding to youth online. We can't just put up a site and then walk away from it. And brands find that even when they make themselves available on social media, customers come to them, and it's not just a complaint, even though that's 20% of the time. 51% are really coming to learn more about products or services. 30% are looking for help. And what influencers do or tell us currently today, and influencers are those people who are paid to promote brands, it's Facebook and Instagram is where they need to be to reach people. But the important thing that they've found is that they have to have an authentic persona in order to get followers. And then lastly, measuring and evaluating your efforts online is incredibly hard, even for the marketing industry that has money to do this. They say that this is a massive problem. So when you're in these spaces and working, to reach youth, know that this can be a struggle for you. And then I just wanted to give this website, if you guys aren't aware of it, it's called WikiHow. And it's a really great site. If there's a new thing that comes online and you're not really sure what it's about, check it and see if it's here. They usually give a walkthrough of how something works. Like here, they have Pokemon Go and Snapchat Grindr, et cetera. So I want to quickly give examples. How much time do I have? Am I good?
You're good.
Sweet. So I want to give some examples of what's currently happening in the field. These are brand new examples. Many of them don't even have data yet, but I think they show a lot of promise. And so the first one is Do You Philly? This is a website that was just launched in July by the Philadelphia Department of Health. And it targets young minority MSM, and it provides them information on testing, on how to order a test kit, how to get condoms. And the beauty of this site is that, one, it was developed with the target audience themselves. They brought in the target audience to help design this website, but it's also very down to earth. It's frank in its language, and it's playful. And so they've done very limited promotions of this to date, but it will be promoted through their high school screening program, which will reach 10,000 kids throughout the year. The next is an online question portal that the Baylor School of Medicine has a teen clinic. They started, it's called Talk with Tift, and they realized that kids were too embarrassed or too afraid or uncomfortable asking questions, so they created this online portal which allows kids to get an individualized response from a healthcare provider within 24 hours. And they did an analysis of the questions that were coming in, and what they found was there were 6 major themes, which you see here, the number one being the cost of services, which to me means we need to make sure that that's available, readily available and easy to find on our sites if we're a clinic. Things about STD testing, birth control, personal health concerns, things around menstruation, parental consent, confidentiality, and sexual health misconceptions. The next is the motion comic, and in the, I should fully disclose that I'm a co-PI in this project, but we just launched this in July, and it's a motion comic is a comic that has been digitally animated and then enhanced with sound and voiceovers. And it can be displayed on multiple devices. So you can watch it on your computer, you can watch it on your cell phone, or you can actually print it out in like a traditional comic book format. And it's targeting 15 to 24-year-olds, and we're hoping to change HIV and STD knowledge, awareness, decrease stigma, and promote healthy behaviors. And the URL is at the bottom. But we chose this medium because of the popularity, one, of comic books. And there's the picture of the Guardians of the Galaxy. Most of the movies, the blockbuster movies these days, are based on comic books, whether we realize it or not. And we also use the Sabido methodology, which looks to have an 80-20 mix of education and entertainment, or vice versa. It's supposed to be 80% entertaining. And we got extensive input and feedback from the, from the target audience. And when we did a pre-post test on our focus groups of the motion comic, what we found was an increase in STD knowledge, a decrease in HIV stigma, and an increase in intentions to engage in healthy behaviors. The next is Street Connect. This is also another CDC product. This has not gone live yet. It's been piloted, and it's a dual-purpose app for homeless youth and their providers. And this was we recognized that there was a high population, about 2.5 million youth are homeless every year in the U.S., and they are disproportionately affected by sexual health issues like STDs. But also 62% of them say that they have access, they either own a mobile device or have access to a mobile device. So an app was created that would actually connect them primarily to resources they need, such as food and shelter, but also embed sexual health information and resources into the app. And the app was created so that they can rate the services so other kids can know if it's a good place to go. It has the capability of pushing out information to them. And then the companion tablet, which isn't shown here for providers, gives providers information on local resources that they can give to the kids, and it also helps providers in their services to the youth by prompting them to do things like STD screenings. And then my last example is Bedsider. And Bedsider is an online birth control website that is by the National Campaign to Prevent Teen and Unplanned Pregnancy. And so it's a support network, essentially, and it has a ton of really great features, one of which is at the bottom of the screen is the visual. It's a visual way to explore and compare every type of birth control method that's out there. They also have these birth control reminders. They have almost 50,000 subscribers to this birth control reminder system, which just last month or July was switched to an app-based. So that's new. But the more importantly, they just partnered with Google. And so now with Google, when anybody puts in a word that's sexual health related for contraception, so IUD or the pill, they'll get these knowledge panels that will show up on the right-hand side of the screen that provides in-depth information about that contraception, common names, how it works, side effects, et cetera. And then lastly, they have this thing called, they have a digital tools for providers. So they've actually created portals that any private, or not even just private, any health clinic or office location can create a secure private portal that they can then use to send reminders to their actual clients. So when your patients come in, you can say, do you want reminders about birth control, for appointments, for refills, and they also have for chlamydia and gonorrhea rescreening. So the website on that is down there, so that's something you wouldn't have to recreate if you were interested in something like that. And then just in conclusion, technology, as we all know, is integrated into almost all aspects of the lives of youth. But what they're using it for and how they're using it is unique to them. Right now, you know, at the time of this talk, YouTube and Snapchat and Instagram are the most popular, followed by Facebook. And we have to recognize they have lots of feelings about it, and they're often contradictory. And they're using it for multiple things. It's for communication, it's for education, but for us, importantly, to recognize it's for information gathering, including sexual health information. And then, you know, we can learn from marketers. We can go where they're going and recognize, you know, mimic what they're doing and have an authentic presence in the space. Thank you.
Okay, we'll take a few questions. There's microphones in these two aisles, so please step up to the microphone so we can hear your question and everybody else can too. Any questions for Rachel?
The which one? It's Bedsider. If you go to Bedsider, and the URL is, if I can see it. Oh, I don't even have it on here.
And while she's finding that, if there's anybody else who needs to speak up to the mic, to step up to the mic, rather. Go ahead.
Thank you for that great talk. Can you talk for a minute about the difference between an agency setting up or a, you know, local health department or whatever, setting up your own way to reach young people on the web versus trying to tap into things that already exist? And in particular, that I think it was part of Bedsider where they had the knowledge panels in Google. So great, because everybody goes to Google. You know, they didn't have to set up their own thing to make that be so valuable. In fact, it was more valuable because they didn't. But maybe there's a moment when it's better to do it your own self.
I agree, and I absolutely agree, because I think there's, like YouTube in particular, it's it's just like the App Store. There's so much content there that to get noticed is incredibly hard. And so although you should probably still have something there that kids can find, it probably would be more effective to try and partner with somebody who has a bigger presence. And we've tried to do that. You know, there's been some examples of partnering with like vloggers who talk about sexual health. I know MTV has done that with a young woman named Lacey Green. She had a lot of followers. She was already talking about sexual health, and they just brought her into their platform to reach a broader audience. They, of course, have, you know, I think people are more likely to answer the phone if it's MTV than the local health department, but.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Go ahead.
Thank you for the great talk. Harlan Rotblatt, L.A. County. Could you talk a little bit, resources you were showing at the end, or the examples you were showing at the end, it looked like some of them were apps and some of them were websites. There's been some work done in L.A. Showing preference for mobile optimized apps, websites versus apps. The reminder kind of thing where you're going to need to use it all the time seems well-suited to an app, but otherwise there's complaints about it using space on your phone, that people would see it, that, you know.
Yeah, no, exactly. So that's the other thing. There are very few times now I think that it makes sense to have an app anymore. Something like the reminders makes sense. Something like for the homeless youth makes sense. But otherwise you should just mobily optimize your content. Because kids... A reminder you're getting every day. You're not getting a chlamydia test every day. You know, that's not something that you need to have on your phone. And there is data to show that most people download an app, open it once, and never open it again. And again, making it so that people can even discover it is really hard. So I would highly, highly suggest that anybody, unless it's something that somebody's going to use daily or on a more regular basis, try and mobily optimize what you're doing, because exactly what you're saying.